saves what you take pictures of and builds up a database of things you've looked at, and it gives awards for so many of the different categories. I took one for my cat, and it came back and said domestic cat. I took one of a person, and it came back and said, I think it just said a mammal, but it didn't say human.
It didn't recognize humans, but it does, you know, does recognize the mammals. So, so it does a good job with the general plants and insects, then, but not necessarily all mammal species.
That much as far as other animals, I'm going to try it on dogs and stuff like that, and maybe a couple of cows, depending on how close I get to them. I'm not sure how far away you can do it with this thing, but it's a real interesting app, and it's so far been fairly accurate. Sometimes it will recognize a plant and give it a general name, but not a specific name.
That's good. I think if... for me, if it says that it's like a snake is poisonous, that's probably the most important thing, whether it's the actual name of the snake or not, but or at least spider or bug, want to avoid the poisonous things.
I had on some photographs of things, insects and snakes and stuff like that, and see if it'll recognize those from a photograph.
To do a few more of those tests, come back and let us know how it worked. It'd be interesting to see if it's recognizing things off of photographs. Let's see. Anything else interesting happening in your life other than resurrecting your 50-year-old radio?
On the way to Michigan, Snowbird, a couple weeks ago, and I found out a long time ago, most people don't see the things in the area where they live unless they have visitors to show around. And we found a nature preserve up in Asheville with a whole bunch of local animals that was pretty interesting. And I also believe there's an aviary in Fletcher, which I haven't been to yet.
I'm taking this trip.
We'll do it someday during the week and go up there and see what's in the bird place.
Is that in North Carolina, or were you saying it's in a different state?
Fletcher is, I don't know if you'd call it a suburb. They probably wouldn't like that terminology, but basically it could be looked upon as a suburb of Asheville. It's up near the airport.
Gotcha. Yeah, we went up there for a fiber fair for my wife, attending there at the across from the airport at the county fairgrounds, I guess. So it's around the airport there in Greenville then.
And there's also a Southeastern Crafts Museum that's all kinds of crafts from the mountains, woodworking, statues, fabrics, little corn husk dolls, some metalwork, and that's free, and that's up on the parkway, and that's pretty interesting and real close, not very far from Asheville.
It'd be interesting to see the Crafts Museum. I'm kind of into woodworking myself, and my wife does fiber and paper crafts, so that would be interesting to see what they've done there in the parkway area of North Carolina.
Of the turned bowls they have, some of them were very large, a couple feet diameter, and I don't know if fluted would be the right word, but showing the pattern of the tree, the inside of the tree, and a lot of fabric stuff. So it's worth an hour or so to look through it.
Yeah, we'll have to try that out one of these weekends that we have. Before it gets too cold. Ed, I think there is one more person up for RAG 2. if you got something else interesting, it'd be great. But I think let me try to get a hold of him and see if he's still hanging on or not, and then I'll be back to you. AC6IW, Jeff, are you still hanging on for RAC 2?
This is Jeff, AC6IW. I was just listening. I'm back home now. I've been driving back from Spartanburg. I played a concert. I'm a trumpet player, and we played a thing with a brass group at Converse College. I was just listening to your conversation. I was curious about the guy learning code and how far he's gotten along with it, and I can just share some of my experience about learning code, but I didn't know how, if he started trying to learn it yet or not. AC6IW.
UDARON. I guess Jeff has a question. How long ago did you learn CW, and how long has it been since you have used it and practiced it?
I had a set of CDs from ARRL called Your Introduction to Morse Code. It's instruction for the characters, and also the second CD is for practice, and it has several exercises. Some of them are QSOs, and others just random words. I got my license in 1968, so I never really used the code that much. So you can tell how long it's been since I've really used it.
Check in. W2MJB. Good evening, Mr. Mark. Wendy and Annette, please check in. KI4DOS, Gary. Also, K3JOY. That's my pretty little bride, Joy. We're at home in Easley. No traffic, no queue tonight. Good evening to you, Miss Wendy, and all on the net. And the gentleman that was asking about code, I have found that the best thing to do is to put your key away, listen to the code, learn the characters and then the words. It's easier. You know what you're going to send, but you don't know what you're going to hear. So it's better to listen and try to send it, you know, learn it while you're sending, because you already know what you're going to send. That's all I got. Back to you, Mark. KI4DOS.
W2MJB, Net Control for the Blue Ridge to Meternet. Thanks for the check-in, Gary. That's KI4DOS, our Wednesday night net controller and SwapNet master. He's in Easley, and he brings along his wife, Joy, K3JOY. Appreciate it, Gary. Have a wonderful evening, and thank you for the comments on learning code. WD8RON, AC6IW. Any other questions or comments?
So my comment, I know that he's got his license sooner than I did. I'm only 54, but I think I got my first ham license in about 1982. I had an uncle that got me into it, and he gave me a Kenwood TS-520S, which is kind of around similar to his 820S that he was talking about. So I remember using that type of radio. But my uncle would not give me the microphone until I at least got my general. And at that time, you had to do code at 5 words per minute for a novice, 13 for a general, and then 20 for extra. But my experience is that it seems like everyone gets kind of hits like a plateau around maybe around 10 words per minute and about 18 words per minute. And if you keep sticking with it seems that your brain kind of goes through a process of it being more automatic. I remember at first it was pretty easy to do 5 words per minute. My mom, just sitting in the class, could do that, was not even working at it. But getting above it, it's like you start hearing letters, and then after that you start hearing words. So just keep doing it until you break over those hurdles, and it'll be pretty cool. I have not done code that much until getting back into ham radio recently, and my code is, I can at least receive it somewhere around 20 words per minute or faster, and I can't write it hardly that fast. I I'm trying to figure out if maybe I start need to type it or something. I don't know. 826, that have you.
Oh, and I worked with people who were intercept operators in the military, and they could do it at amazing speeds, and actually it becomes a second language. They could just sit and listen to it and tell you what it was saying without writing anything down. The best story I've ever heard was somebody who was stationed up north, Thule or someplace like that, and they would send stuff back and forth to the Russians just to practice and copy it. And the best story was an operator with a manual typewriter with an earphone with each side going to a different frequency, and the first line would be from left side, the second line from the right side, and he would alternate lines frequencies, and he was doing something like 60 words a minute for each one.
There's a guy that, like I said, I'm a trumpet player, and there's a friend of mine named Steve Rentschler that was also a trumpet player, and we were out in Los Angeles, which is where I was from, and at about 2 or 3 in the morning, he said, hey, come with me to the top of Malibu, and there's this place where they have all these microwave towers, but they had a ham radio shack up there with amps and like 1,000-foot long wires in different directions. And while I was talking to my friend, he could do that. I'd have a conversation with him, and he could be doing code at the same time we're talking at somewhere around like 60 words per minute. I've never got that. I think the fastest I could ever do is maybe like 30 or 35 words a minute. But I can maybe pick out a few words or something when it's up around 60, but not very much. But I think the more you do anything like that, it starts to be that you're, like you're saying, your brain starts hearing it like another language. Like I know once I kind of got over 18 words per minute, it became pretty easy to do about 25 or 30, and I started hearing words instead of letters. So it's like I'd hear the word that, and be like, and I'd like hear it as a whole rhythm or the word instead of each individual letter. So it's pretty cool. I want to get back into it, and I agree with what Gary was saying too earlier about you don't need to do your key as much, because, you know, I started out on a straight key also, but I have like one of those iambic paddles, but I think that hearing it will kind of ingrain that into your head too, with the spacing of letters and solid rhythm and stuff like that, so that when you do send it, you won't send it kind of messed up with the rhythm on it, or uneven, or your speed going up and down or something. But it's cool. I wish more people did code, and I kind of wish that we had code as a requirement, at least for the entry-level license, so that people at least had to know something about it. But, oh well. But AC6IW.
I had a set of tapes at one time. I don't know that I still have them. And it was geared toward learning words. And it started out by sending whole words. Of course, a 3- and 4-letter words to start with. But the whole idea was to learn the common words and use those and recognize those. Another theory was to send letters while you were learning the letters, because you would get both the receiving and the sending to reinforce each other. And so I'm not sure which way. This little thing I'm working on has a setup in it where it's pre-programmed, and you can have it so it sends one letter, and then you send that back, and then it sends that letter and another letter, and so you copy that, and it builds up to 5 letters group to do both receiving and sending.
On your 820 or 820S, whatever it is, are you able to use it to receive code on HF?
I set up, and I still have a 520 also. I was using that for Mars because the frequency spreads a little bit wider than the 820. But on the mode for this one, it can be CW, upper sideband, lower sideband, or FSK.
I know my 520S didn't do FFK. I don't think it did.
That's what the 520 would do, because all I used it for was voice, and the Mars frequencies were beyond what the 820 would do. That's why I used that. And I like that one. It's very much the same as far as controls and all, just a little bit more of a frequency spread. And I believe this one, and I think you have to get something to add to it, will also be able to do slow scan TV.
I remember, like, when the first computer that I ever got was an Apple IIe, and that was probably about 1983, and I was a ham already. And I remember I created a program in BASIC. I think I, like, found the how to do it or something, and it could receive slow scan TV and weather facts, so I could tune to the different weather satellite stuff that's broadcast over HF, and it would pull that in. There are programs for that now on a computer too. I know you can do it, probably just plug it right into the audio jack on it, and you'll be able to do it setting it to like lower sideband or upper sideband, and then you might not even need an extra board if you've got your computer.
Just for a minute and see if there's any other check-ins, and if not, I'm going to go ahead and close the net, and then you guys can continue on. I've got to hit the sack for a big day tomorrow, so let me go ahead and do one last call for check-ins, and then we'll officially close the net, and then you guys can continue on with your discussion. So any other comments or check-ins, please call W2MJB or Net Control. Hearing nothing, I will go ahead and officially close the net with, I think Anna will be calling the net tomorrow night, and she does a fantastic job, so please come back and check in with Anna tomorrow night. Just to let you all know, we had 61 check-ins. I'm going to go ahead and submit the electronic report, but I will not have it announced over the radio. That way Ed and Jeff can continue discussing what they want, and y'all can go on later on if you want to without the interruption of the official net report. So 61 check-ins tonight, great night and great net, and a lot of great conversation. So I appreciate everyone coming in tonight, checking in, and having the discussion. So this is W2MJB, now securing the formal portion of the net, the net actually, and we'll let you all continue on. Thanks, and have a great evening.
Hello, Ant.
Hey, ROS, this is AC6RW.
And for you, how fast can you type?
The last time I actually checked my speed was a typing program called Mavis Beacon. I could do it pretty consistently around 50 words a minute, maybe 60. But, I mean, I haven't checked my speed on it. I can probably do faster if I'm really trying, but because I type all the time. Because I teach trumpet and brass lessons over the internet, and everything that I do for my students, I type. So emails, everything else, it's just, I'm typing all the time.
When they were training operators in the Army to receive, they had manual typewriters then, but the keys did not have letters indicated on the keys like most typewriters have. So when someone received a letter, he associated that physically with a particular key. So he could end up receiving stuff and never really know what he was receiving, because he would just type it out based on whatever signal he received.
So it was like, instead of like the letter, them knowing that they're typing the letter F or whatever, they just hear it and know that you hit that one key.
Because that way he didn't have to translate from the sound to mentally to a letter and then to a key. It just went to that particular key. I don't know, if you play music, it might be like people playing music. They see the symbol on in the music and then blow that particular note or whatever they need to do to produce that note. They don't have to really translate it and go through that middle process. And that was one way perhaps of picking up your speed is learn how to associate the sound with a particular key and leave out that middle portion.
There are people that play music, of course, that don't read music. I read music, like, all the time. I kind of feel like if I show up to a gig and there isn't written music, it's very, it's like a lot of work for me to do it. I do it, though, but, like, for example, there's a friend of mine that is a DJ and a trumpet player also from Asheville, and we do some nice thing, parties and stuff, and he doesn't have any printed music, so I have to basically listen and copy what I'm hearing, and at the end of doing that for like 3 hours or so, my brain is tired with trying to do that, but my normal way of doing it is looking at a piece of paper and being able to just read it straight off a piece of paper, but maybe there's something to that with learning code like that, like you're saying, it might. I bet the people that do that never did code before probably can start to ramp their speed up super fast. And I wonder, it'd be interesting to know how people learned and if there's a faster way to learn it. That's interesting.
For teen, I sat down one weekend with my father's typewriter and a typing book and learned the keyboard. And since then, at one time, I guess I could hit 60 words a minute. Not so much. That was on a mechanical typewriter. I don't really like the keyboards on the computers, particularly on laptops. I really don't like those. But if you ask me, what finger do you use to type a particular letter, I have to think about it because I just do it. And that's probably what you do with the music.
The sense, like with music, is where it's almost like I can like hear it and feel it, or it's, I don't know, it's like your ear and your brain kind of become more connected. So that's kind of what I was getting at with learning code. And I told some of my younger students, it's like, say if you're practicing scales or counting or doing something like that, rhythms and stuff, at a certain point, it's like you almost are not thinking anymore. It's just happening automatically. There's a conscious process at first, but then after a while, it becomes like you're not even really trying to, you know, like think about, oh, that's the letter E. It's just like it pops into your brain. You don't think, you know, it's, so that's where, you know, the more you repeat it. I think with a lot of stuff, the more repetition we do, it makes it to where your brain takes it to another level where it's not as conscious and it becomes more subconscious.
So you said you were teaching, because I'm curious about teaching online.
I teach trumpet and all the brass instruments like trombone, French horn, tuba, euphonium, which is kind of like a smaller tuba, or baritone horn, kind of the same thing. And I've taught online since 2004, and, I mean, you know, since you're ham and have been around, but I knew, like, way back when I first became a ham and saw some of the FlowScan TV and some other people that had FastScan TV, and I got on the internet, like, back in the early 90s before the web was even around, and I knew, I was like, I know I'm going to be able to teach on the internet, and then so when it first was sort of possible for average people to do that, I had someone contact me asking for lessons by videotape, and I said, no, I can't teach you by videotape, but will you try doing it over webcam? So 2004 was the first time I did that with iChat and AOL Instant Messenger. There was a version back then that would interface with iChat, and you could do decent video chat, and then Skype came around later, and then FaceTime took over that, and took over iChat. There's been other programs, but I primarily just use FaceTime and Skype. I've got Zoom, but I don't like Zoom for private lessons as much as like a group video kind of talking chat thing. But that's what I do. I do a lot of that.
And then the Zoom, haven't really figured it all out, but used a little bit. One of the clubs in South Carolina, the Thermal Club, was talking about doing some classes there, and I put together some classes on message handling and a few things like that, and used PowerPoint, and I figured eventually we may do it by Zoom, so I don't have to travel down there, and then since a lot of people don't travel that much at night, can pick up a lot of people using PowerPoint for that. I wonder if you'd ever use PowerPoint on Zoom.
PowerPoint on Zoom and also on Skype and FaceTime, but I kind of do it in a different way than I have not really used it through the actual Zoom program. I have another program called Wirecast Pro that's like, I think it's like Wirecast Pro Studio, which is, it's a pretty high-end, like, streaming video platform where you can hook up multiple cameras, multiple audio interfaces, and have a bunch of, like, audio and video clips queued up, and multiple layers. You can do like lower thirds and make it look like a complete TV broadcast. So when I have used, when I have needed to do something like slides or something like that with Zoom or the other ones, the way I've done it is I'll use that program, output it as what they call a virtual camera, and then on the other programs, I just select the virtual camera coming out of Wirecast. And then it's really that I'm running all the media out of Wirecast, and it's going through Zoom. So it allows me to do some stuff in the other programs that nobody else can do. So it looks a little bit more polished. But the program's more expensive, but I bought it and got into it maybe 2009 or earlier because I hosted like my own event at Anderson University for about 3 years, and I streamed it, and I looked at all the different ways people were streaming back then and went with this, got them to be a sponsor, and they gave me some complimentary copies of the program, and then I went and bought other ones myself. It's probably about $1,000 program, maybe a little bit more. Might be a little cheaper now, but it's not like Zoom where you just download it and pay a subscription, but that program is super powerful, and it is able to do things that seriously look like a television broadcast. It's very cool. You have to look it up. It's by a company called Telestream.
Kind of interested in that because in the last year, or 2 years, I guess, with teachers having to do online teaching, and I went before the Transylvania County School Board, and my proposal was that every classroom have a video camera in it, and after thinking about it, I would probably put it in one corner so that a parent could tune in on his child's class and see what the child is doing in the classroom. I've gotten various responses from that from teachers and other people. Some teachers like it, some don't. I know down in South Carolina somewhere, I'm not sure exactly where, that's being done.
I heard about that too. I mean, I can see where some teachers probably would not like it. I personally would like it, because being like a private teacher, and I think it's good to have the whole thing recorded, because I have nothing to hide, and I don't care if anyone watches what I'm doing. With younger students and parents, I'll let them come watch a lesson, but I kind of tell them, if you're going to come in and watch a lesson, you sit over here and don't say anything, because I don't want them like I'm teaching an extra person or interrupting what I'm trying to do to the student, because I'm trying to make the best use of the time. But if they're just watching what's going on, I think that's actually a good thing, because if some teacher got accused of something, they can just play the video back, and they should actually like that. I've got a 16-year-old daughter, and she's done homeschooling. She's just graduating high school. She's graduating early, but she's done homeschooling since, I think, first or second grade. And as she got more advanced, she's done several of her classes, like physics and calculus and some other things like that that I can't teach her. She's done it online. And one of the things that they do, there's a retired university professor that's teaching one of their math classes. They have a platform where all the students log in, and it's kind of like Zoom, and they can do PowerPoint on it, and then they can ask questions, and it's like they're raising their hand to ask a question, kind of like Zoom, and it's very cool, because if she misses a class, she can go replay what happened in the class, so it's like she's getting exactly what happened in the class. So I think the teaching online for some things is good, but for other things, I don't think it is good. Like, you can't do a band or an orchestra or something like that where it has to be really interactive online. It just won't work right. I know some people that have tried to do it, and I think it's like terrible. Now, what I do with teaching is one-on-one, so a lot of what I'm doing is they play, I stop them, I demonstrate, we go back and forth, but I'm not really playing a duet or playing along with them. And that's something that you just can't do, because even the best good internet connection, you have lag time, and it just still can't be absolutely in sync.
How you deal with the lag time? You said your daughter is homeschooled. I'd like to give you a site that you might find of value for her. It's called The Greatest Courses. Are you familiar with that?
High school. She's already like accepted to college, and she's going to take off like all next year to do ballet. She's wanting to be a professional ballerina. So, but I'll write it down, because that'll be interesting. Because I mean, I'm always interested to know what's out there too. Let me write it down.
What this company does is it goes to universities and picks out what they consider the best professors, lecturers on almost any subject you can think of, from nuke physics to biology to math or whatever. And it does have stuff about dance. It's called Watch Great Courses, WATCH, Great, GREAT, Courses, CourseSes.com. And you want to buy the courses. Now they're putting them on DVD. I used to get them on CD and play them on car trips, but now I think most of them are DVDs. You want to make sure that you buy them when they're on sale, because they have two or three sales a year. The phone number is 800-832-2412, and they'll send you a catalog. But going to college would be the same thing. I'm watching one now on calculus.
I might want to do that myself, because I never got to calculus myself. Like I said, my daughter did, and I looked at some of it, and I'm like, I think I got to like pre-calculus. So I've had friends that did that, but I'm curious just to know about it. So that would be a fun thing. I'm always into like learning new things. There's also another site. I'm trying to think of it. I'll think of it. I'll let you talk. I'm trying to think of the name of this other place that does some stuff like that that's similar, but they're all free, and I think they're more based on like philosophy and government. And anyway, I'll let you talk.
College has a bunch of free courses. Most of them are political, but Hillsdale College up in Michigan, The Great Courses has all kinds of stuff. Anything. I think we first were listening to cassettes about Churchill and all kinds of stuff. So it's definitely worth looking at to see what these are. And the calculus course I'm watching now, and I've had calculus courses, most calculus courses end up being mechanical, I call mechanical courses, and that you're learning how to manipulate formulas. This one, the professor goes into what calculus does and how it does it, as opposed to the mechanical formulas of working out all the algebraic stuff. This one goes into explaining how it works and what can be done with it.
Hillsdale College, that's what I was trying to think of. One of the things I'd like to listen to is like maybe a course on the Federalist Papers and actually read all of them. I started it. It's a little bit dry, but I think I'd actually like to sit down and read through the whole thing and hear someone teach on it to understand more of the background behind the Constitution and the framers and stuff. The thing you were saying with calculus, one of my music friends from college, he and his brother started a computer software company that was based on the idea of the software creating well-built musical compositions that would start and end at a certain time. So if you made a video clip and said, I want 13.4 seconds worth of jazz, and then I want it to go to 3.7 seconds worth of classical music and 7.9 seconds worth of hip-hop music, they came up with a way of where it knew the structure of the music and the sound files that were recorded with real live musicians these were real new compositions that my friend wrote. It would assemble it and give the person maybe like 3 or 5 choices to pick between. And my friend was telling me that because of calculus, he was able to solve some of the things with some of the programming issues they ran into with writing the code. So I didn't know exactly what he was talking about because I never took calculus, but I thought it was interesting.
I think you would enjoy this course. You go online and look up, but I don't have the name of it handy. Where will your daughter be going to school?
She's gotten accepted to about 3 colleges. One of them is called Butler University up in Indiana. She got $96,000 of academic scholarship, and their LA scholarship wouldn't be determined until she's more like ready to go. So she's accepted two years in advance. She looked at several different ones, but that's probably where she wants to go. But this next year, the plan is she's going to go to Miami for a month, stay with a nice family that's going to put her up there and study with a really good ballet instructor that's in Miami and that's trained a lot of professionals. She's done that a couple summers ago, so we know the teacher. The teacher's really good. And then she'll come back and do more things and take private lessons in different places, and then go back in maybe like April or May of 2023. And in that time period, we're hoping that maybe she'll get offered a training apprenticeship sort of position in a professional company. She's going to a thing for 5 weeks out in, it's called Ballet West out in Salt Lake City. That's tied into a university out there too. So it could be that they could offer something there, and maybe they offered an academic scholarship too. But it's a lot of stuff to try to figure out because it's expensive, and we don't want to like make a bad decision and have her miss an opportunity to get into professional company. It's difficult. I think it's more difficult to make it as a professional ballerina than like a professional musician in an orchestra or something like that. There's a lot of competition, and you could be doing great, and then you like tear your ACL or get some kind of injury, and your career is completely over. So it's kind of like being in a, you know, like a professional athlete or something like that. You could be, your career could be over immediately, and you don't make as much money as unless you're in a really big company. But if you do, it can be a really cool thing. And she's kind of got a really analytical teacher sort of a way about her. I think she'll end up being a teacher later too, because she's very good at looking at things and noticing, and she's very kind, and everyone likes her too. So I think there's so many things going for her that it, something's going to come together. It's just a lot of unknown things right now.
And a lot of normal academic subjects also?
That's the plan. Like if she ends up going the college route with like Butler University and doing that, she would be doing something and probably focusing more on getting, you know, like certifications and things that would kind of set her a little bit apart with, you know, like physical therapy and stuff like that, or not physical therapy, but like more having like, there are different levels, I don't know the names of them and stuff, but there are different levels of certifications where it's not just you're like, oh, hey, here's some person that used to dance ballet, but here's a person that's like trained, knows, you know, knows the physical, drawing a blank on the word I'm trying to think of, but so you're not going to, some ballet teachers, if they don't know what they're doing, so, and we've seen it before where they push the students too hard, they haven't done enough strength training, and their technique's bad, and then all of a sudden they'll get injuries, and that's the fault of the teaching, where they don't do it properly, and they don't catch things, and you can actually hurt people, and like we knew of one girl that did something like that at one place, and she like had to have a whole bunch of surgeries because the damage that was caused to her, and she never danced again. But the thing my daughter has going with hers, the place she did, is really focused on all aspects of like building your strength and all the different things, training and stuff, so where you're dancing correctly and your body's strong enough to where you're not going to get injuries. And then also, you know, there's stuff with like some of these things with dancing too, the girls get, the teachers and the girls get too focused on trying to get them to be skin and bones, and that'll actually, if they're malnourished, they'll get injuries from that too. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff is out there, so thankfully she's not gotten messed up by any of that, and I hope that she ends up being able to teach other people how to do that right and having a career where people will want to take from her because she's done something really good with it. But she's only 16, but I mean, this is like when it will start pretty soon where maybe she might have a career in it. I've talked a long time, probably time out to repeat her, but let me let tee off. So the short answer is if she gets into a professional company, we will be excited, and she'll probably put college on hold or just do it kind of part-time, and whether, because the focus is getting a career in ballet, and the college stuff can be picked up slower along the way, because if that opportunity opens up, I mean, I want her to go for it. Kind of like I think sometimes when, like, you know, someone goes to, I mean, I'm not a big sports fan, but say someone like that, Trevor Lawrence or whatever, that was at Clemson, he gets an offer to go pro and make millions. It seems kind of stupid to like say, no, I'm going to go complete my college, because who knows, he could go get injured while he's playing college football and never get that opportunity again, and he could make millions of dollars playing pro and then retire after that and get his college degree and go do something with whatever he wants after that. So I think a lot of times people focus on the college as if like the only thing you should do. And I think everyone's path doesn't have to be the same way. So thankfully, my ex-wife and I agree on that, and I just hope it works out for my daughter. But we don't want her, she's academically really strong, so when she's done all the homeschooling, we've always made sure that she's like ahead on all that, so she can get academic scholarships and get into pretty much anywhere she wants to, but dance is her thing that she wants to do.
Plant, write down this email address. Kilo, November, November, Oscar, Tango, X-ray, @gmail.com. That's my email address. Send me an email, and as the subject put semester plan, I put together a Excel file, if you will, or program on planning out all the courses for a college course to include the major, the minor, school requirements, requirements for going on to a master's, that would things you'd want to take to go on to a master's. And the reason I've done that is I have seen too many students get to the last semester before graduation and find out that they need a requirement that is two semesters long, but it only begins in September. So they lose a year because they haven't planned it. So I will send you that file, and you might find that of interest for her in planning out whatever course you decide to make. What I tell people is get the file, save it as a with another name. I usually put the date as the name, and then you've got the original, and there are instructions in the file as to how to use it.
AC6IW, I'm going to say the email again, Kilo, November, November, Oscar, Tango, X-ray, @gmail.com. Is that correct?
Kilo, November, November, Oscar, Tango, X-ray, @gmail. But send that to me, and I'll send you a copy of that file. I think you'll find it rather useful. You may also find it useful for your students.
That'll be good. I was going to also tell you that whenever you get ready to, I don't know what your situation is, putting up your, you said you're putting up a 500-foot loop. I have an antenna launcher that I wouldn't mind letting you borrow or coming over and using it to help you out with putting that up. In my backyard, we're in an area that's not really, doesn't really have an HOA, but I mean, there's no way, nobody would ever, I don't think we can put up a tower or anything like that, but we've got some tall trees. So my antenna that I've found that works really good is I've got a 268-foot infed, and it goes up vertically like 70 feet, and then it goes horizontally 200 feet horizontal across all the trees. And one of my neighbors gave me permission to put it in his yard. I don't even think he knows it's in his yard because it's so high up in the tree. And I used like some paracord and tied it on the tree. And it's probably the only way you know that it's there is if you looked on the back side of this tree and could see it. But I don't even know that he noticed it yet. But the launcher thing is pretty fun to use. And it can fire it probably at least 150 feet up into the air if you pump it up really good. But you're welcome to use that. What's your situation for where you want to put up your loop?
Acre and a half, and I've got all the trees are anywhere from 20 to 50 or 60 feet high. And I can make a loop out of it, and I'm still debating just whether to use that, or I suppose I want to use ladder line, so I'm still exploring, researching just how to do that. And there are a bunch of trees, so I am plotting out that as far as how to put it up. Where are you actually located?
You know where the Sims Library is on Pelham Road? There's also a Green Charter School. I'm one block away from that. I look out of my studio window where I am at my radio right now. I look between someone's house and actually can see the library. So I don't know if you know where that is, but if you don't, I'm pretty close to Roper Mountain Road and 385. So it's maybe like a mile or so north of that. Where are you?
What town are you near? Are you near the actual airport?
So you're ways away. But I have a friend that lives in Brevard, not far from the airport. So if you need help with that, I could have an excuse to go up there with him and have lunch and shoot the wires up in the tree and stuff for this. Shoot some paracord up in the tree and then pull it up with that is probably the way to do it.
I am debating what kind of wire to use and the actual length. From my measurements, I can come close to 500 feet as almost a rectangle. And that would be, at least 20 feet up plus. And I'm wondering how it is pulling that length of wire through the trees.
It's not that hard. The way the launcher works is it has like this little plastic projectile on it, a little red flag, and then it's got a section of it that you pressurize with like a tire pump, and you open a valve and it fires the thing out of it like a cannon. And there's someone gave me, one of my friends gave me a, he's also a ham, I let him use it. He gave me a one of these open fishing reels. And so it's got a fishing reel that's attached to the projectile, so there's no drag on it, and it fires way up into the tree. And then once it falls down out of the tree, then you tie the paracord on it, and then you pull that back with, you pull it back up through the tree, and then you tie your wire on it, and the paracord is really strong, so it can pull, I think it pulled like over 500 pounds. And so pulling the wire up there is no big deal, but what you probably do is put like an insulator on it, and then tie it on there really good, and then just run the wire on it, and then have the loop kind of suspended between the insulators. The insulators are being held with paracord. That's probably what I'd do, and then just tie the paracord on the tree somewhere to where it's going to stay in one place way up in the air. And then you'd always have the way to like lower it back down and fix it if something got broken or whatever. But I don't know if you need ladder line for it or not. In my backyard, I'm using this coax. And it's the way it's set up. There's a website it's called Palomar Engineering. And that guy has a bunch of articles and stuff about different types of antennas. So I bought a couple Balance from him and one pre-made antenna. And then I talked to him on the phone a good bit, and he gave me a bunch of information. But you can do a lot of this stuff yourself without, you just need the Balance, and you can go to Home Depot and buy the wire. I bought one of the antennas and you cut the wire and stuff, but then the other one, like an emergency one that I have on spools, so say if I wanted to take my radio in a disaster situation, I've got coax and the in-fed antenna and everything already measured out and on two spools, and I could just like put it up any place. But since you have that much tree and height and everything, you should be really good.
Rather than the standoff insulators, because of the type of trees, to use coated wire and just drag it through the trees so it would be insulated from the trees. I don't want to have a bare wire going through the trees, but I'm wondering about that. I have another site for you to look at. This is a website. It's one my brother put together. I have a niece-in-law, I guess. She's married to a nephew. And she just graduated and is going up to New York as a dancer and actor and singer. So write this one down. https://ray, R-A-Y, Winstead, W-I-N-S-T-E-A-D, .com/Maddie, Mike Alpha Delta Delta Yankee, /Maddie Singing, Papa Sierra Uniform Showcase.htm. That's kind of long, but did you get all that?